Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers' journey through the wormhole with Quark, Dax, and their good friends, Tom and Harry. Join us as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Your hosts along this journey are Terry Farrell, our enchanting science officer. Terry is with us today. Sometimes we have Armin Shimerman, our beloved entrepreneur, but he's not here today, so we send him our good wishes. Can't wait to see him back. Garrett Wong, our forever ensign, and myself, your favorite helmsman, Robert Duncan McNeil. Remember, you can get this podcast and all the bonus material. You can get it ad-free if you sign up at Patreon to become a Patreon member at patreon.com/theDeltaFlyers. You can start as little as $3 a month and get it ad-free. Tons of bonus material. Please check it out. patreon.com/theDeltaFlyers. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hey.
Terry. Hi, Gary.
Hey, Robbie.
How are you guys?
Yeah, good.
Pretty good.
You guys good. And girl. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to be gender specific. How is everyone doing?
I assume guys means guys and gals.
Yeah, I know.
I know people are sensitive about it right now, but I just, and I can understand that completely.
Absolutely.
But in my mind, that was something the teachers would say without, you know, they meant all of us.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, didn't mean male. It meant everybody.
Yeah. I'm in the same habit. Garrett and I have talked about that. Like, even on this podcast, we've really tried to be conscious of using pronouns and descriptions that are accurate. So, you know, we thank everyone. We don't say thanks, guys or, you know,
which is what we're used to, guys.
Yeah, I think that's important. So anyway, we've got a couple of birthdays, shout outs today. First of all, PJ Pick. PJ, happy birthday on June 5th from the Delta Flyers. Happy, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, PJ.
Happy birthday, PJ.
We also have Gabriel Dominic Girgis. June 8th is Gabriel's birthday. Happy birthday, Gabriel.
Happy birthday, Gabriel.
Happy birthday, Gabriel.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, it's time for our poetry synopsis. We're going to start with Robbie McNeil with his limerick of Melora.
That sound very intimidated. We're going to start with Robbie McNeil.
I love that.
I hope I live up to the
Should I sing it? We're going to start with Robbie McNeil.
Yes. Okay. Here I go. My poem for Melora. Here we go. It's in the style of a limerick, but not really a limerick because
what?
Well, it's
what are you talking about?
It's my cadences are off, and it's just not exact. But I do my best.
All right, let's
here
hear
we
it.
Go. Melora is the new cartographer advisee. Bashir gets some romance in low gravity. Quark thinks he's going to die, but it's Fallot who will cry. Being a little mermaid isn't what it's cracked up to be.
That was in cadence. What are you talking about?
It was kind of in cadence.
It was amazing.
Although the first line, it sounded like you said, Melora is the nude cartographer advisee. It sounded like you said
nude. Did it sound nude?
It sounded nude to me, but Robbie said
nude. She was nude in this episode when she had her procedure. She was under the sheet. So
very important to be
that
nude.
Would fit as well. She is the nude cartographer advisee.
True. All right. Here's my haiku for Melora.
Yes.
New ensign assigned. Bashir makes out in low grav. Melora not dead.
Nice. You got low gravity in there too.
That low grav. Not dead.
Not dead.
All right, now let's get some real poetry. Some real art.
My goodness. Mine is kind of long. I'm sorry.
It's not two pages,
but it's a page. Okay.
Okay. Thanks. Here we go.
Love is divine, stands the twist of time. So thine own self be true, never to change to fit. someone else's version of you. To betray yourself, your version of you, will damage the very essence of what you hold true. And you eventually must own your truth, or love that blossomed never was love in clear view.
Oh, thank you. A lot of levels there.
A lot of levels. Yeah. I'm telling you, that's
I
the
did not
art.
Include Quark, though. I feel bad. I'm sorry,
that's
Armin.
Right. That's all right.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about Quark in this episode, so it's
yes,
okay.
Yes, we will. Well, tell us, Garrett, about
guest
who's involved.
Let's talk about this. Okay, first of all, let's just talk about guest stars. Daphne Ashbrook as Ensign Melora Paslar. Now, mm-hmm. Robbie.
Phenomenal.
Did you work with her before?
Daphne Ashbrook?
Hmm.
Did I?
I'm asking if you did, because she did 5 episodes of The OC as the character Dawn Atwood from 2003 to 2006. So
I
in
don't
that
think
span,
I only directed 2 or 3 OCs. Yeah, right. I can't remember.
And you never know. It could have been one of the ones she was on, but you don't recall having her.
I don't think so.
That's right. We also have Peter Crombie as Fallot Kott. Fallot Kott, of course, is the wronged individual, the person that was wronged by Quark. Now, mm-hmm. interesting enough, Robbie, he wrote a short drama in 2006 called Threshold.
Oh, how funny. That was the title of a Voyager episode that's very famous.
Harry.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yes.
With Robbie's character.
Yes.
And
Janeway and I had babies together in the episode.
Yes.
Lizard babies. They were both lizards.
I was going to say seahorses, but okay, yeah. Lizards.
Janeway and Paris had seahorses. I like that. Unfortunately, Mr. Crombie passed away January 10th of 2024.
Oh my gosh.
Recently.
Mm-hmm. We also have Dawn Stark as Ashrock. Ashrock, that's the alien who...
That's the amazing makeup. Yes.
It's amazing makeup.
The weird little piece there.
Guys, what did you think of the minute?
No, it was... It looked like Morn to me.
No, but what? Come on. I mean, when you see that wrinkliness and that line down the middle.
That one. The heavy set one at the beginning with the gold piece.
The one that's looking for the gold piece. What did it remind you of, Garrett? I don't know.
The sack that holds your gonads, basically.
Ooh.
Garrett.
I did not go there.
Terry and I are both in shock right now.
All right.
Yeah.
Because I brought up ball sack, and now you guys are in shock over this.
I would not want my face to look like a ball sack.
I don't
sack.
Want that either,
I would
but
not
that's
be happy.
Okay, fine. All right. Great makeup overall, but still, that's the first thing I saw. I go, oh my gosh, this is the ball sack face alien. You know, that's what I thought immediately.
Right.
Okay, all right.
Let's keep on moving. Let's keep on going.
Ron Taylor
as Klingon Chef. Klingon Chef.
Yes.
Did you know that his claim to fame was he was in the original off-Broadway production of Little Shop of Horrors? He was the voice of Audrey the Killer Plant, basically.
Yes, I know. Now I put it all together.
That's amazing.
That was a big deal when that show first came out.
He did over 2,000 performances of that play. It's amazing. So
do you remember that commercial,
Robbie,
in New York?
When they showed the commercials for that, it was so great. I missed that about New York. I did too.
Yeah. But that was amazing. Go ahead, Robbie. Talk about it.
Little Shop of Horrors was the only New York production my mother saw before she passed away. And I got to take her to that when I had first moved to New York in 1983, summer of 83.
So she saw Ron Taylor. I mean, she heard Ron Taylor's voice then.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Great production. Really wonderful.
Yeah. Well, I can't believe we just missed each other there. It's so weird.
I know. Yeah, I know.
And on a sad note, Mr. Taylor passed away in January of 2002. So another January passing of a cast member, guest cast member.
Love to their friends and family, both of them.
Yeah. We have the writers. We have, this is really super, super interesting because the story is by Evan Carlos Summers, who, believe it or not, was actually in a wheelchair. So he felt that he was the right one to write this story. But if you look at that screen, there's a lot of names on the teleplay because it says on the teleplay, it's Evan Carlos Summers and Stephen Baum and Michael Piller, ampersand James Crocker. So all those names, what happened was Evan Carlos Summers had written a prior episode called Battle Lines. You remember that, where the people kept fighting back and forth, you know? Well, he wrote that in a week and a half, and he thought he could do the same thing with this episode, but he was already swamped with another job that he had outside of the show. So he didn't put up enough time. He didn't have enough time to really do it justice.
Finish it,
when he turned it in, they weren't happy with it. So they gave Stephen Baum a shot. He gave it a shot. They didn't like what he did. So then Michael Piller came in with James Crocker at the end, and they said, okay, we've got to revamp this, revamp that. And that was the final shooting script.
So a lot of drama
going on. Oh my goodness. A lot of development, a lot of drama, but also a writer who is disabled was a huge thing too.
Very cool.
Trivia. But like, I'm exhausted from all that work just now.
Oh my gosh. Just for hearing about it, it's exhausting. You're right.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine how upsetting it would be for executive producers to just be like, oh, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It's still not right.
It's not even ready yet. And let's assign somebody and then someone else.
And we're starting writing tomorrow. Yeah.
Exactly.
But then the guy that took the second shot at it, his wasn't good enough either. So they were like, oh no, let's go again.
Well, if they got credit, if those other writers that are first, you know, rounds got credit by the Writers Guild, then some of their material is still in the script.
Correct. Like, so it's not completely abandoned.
Yeah. Because the Writers Guild will go back to all the previous drafts.
They'll look at all the drafts.
They will look at it and decide what the credits are. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Really?
Yeah.
So do they have like a whole, what do I want to say?
Like a department or something?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, they do. Yeah.
That's
They
cool.
have to go back through and compare changes and see how much percentage of this or that is in there. Yeah.
Wow. The due diligence, the nitpick department of the Writers Guild, basically.
The nitpick department.
Yikers. What a job. Okay. Directed by Vinlich Kolbe, a.k.a. Rick Colby, a.k.a. the Baron, as they called him on Deep Space Nine. Yes. The lovely Rick Colby directed that one.
Yeah.
And that's everybody. Yeah.
All right. Let's get into it. We start with a space shot and a log that is a medical log. Bashir, my man Bashir.
This is Team Bashir. Team Bashir is what this is. And we know that Robbie was immediately excited about this episode.
I was very
excited. Minute he heard Bashir speak, he said, this is an episode I'm going to like.
Isn't his voice lovely, though? What a lovely way to start the show is Alexander Sadegh's voice. Oh, my. Diggs' voice.
Yeah. I love his voice. Well, he has a medical log where he talks about how he and Chief O'Brien have been working overtime to prepare for this new cartographer, not a nude cartographer.
Right.
A new cartographer, Ensign Melora Paslar, the first Elasian to join Starfleet. And as such, she will require special accommodations. So we're not really sure, like, what is this Elasian, you know, we don't know. And we go into the infirmary where we see Bashir wheeling around in a wheelchair. And we learn that the Cardassian gravity controls on the station aren't going to work for Melora. She's going to need this custom unit. And he's talking with Dax, explaining all of this. When Kira calls, she's here.
Wait,
her ship's
he's
docking.
So dreamy-eyed about her.
Already,
he's super dreamy eyed about her and super proud of all these adjustments he's made on the chair.
Yes, agreed.
I do like Dax's line. I haven't seen one of these in 300 years. So it's been 300 years since a wheelchair was a commonplace thing to see. So
and Dax was around.
Dax was around then, of course.
300 years ago.
Yeah, a prior 300 Dax.
300 years ago.
Yeah. And by the way, that wheelchair, I don't know what the option would have been to make it more modern, but it looks like a pretty basic, you know, 1990s wheel.
Like hodgepodgey, didn't it?
It did a little bit to me. They put some kind of plate on the joystick as if that was going to change
the look of it a little bit.
It was a little lame. Agreed. Yeah, we go to the promenade next, where Miles stops Bashir and Dax on their way to go meet Melora. Mm-hmm. And he tells them that they've installed ramps around the station for Melora, but there's still some places she won't be able to access. And Dax suggests that they maybe have transporters standing by, which leads Bashir to say, no, she doesn't want any extra, just the basics. She's very particular about getting extra help. So we're starting to get a sense that she's going to be very proud, maybe, or
yes, I think pride is proud is a good word, because right now we don't know
anything about her alien species. Mm-mm. We don't know about her condition. We don't know anything.
And somebody who says, I don't want any extra help, also pride, but also she wants her independence.
Yeah.
You know, yes. That's like, I get the sense of that.
Yes. Yes.
A little bit of a chip on the shoulder as well, just from how people treated her, maybe. I don't think
you're getting it yet. Well, not yet. Hmm. I don't think we're getting that yet.
Okay.
Because she was real specific about what she needed. Don't give me extra. I'm actually thinking when I was seeing that, like, we're all going to really get along because.
Oh, interesting. How great.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Until... I was getting from that that they're intimidated by her, I guess. That it's, I was getting their perspective a little bit, that they're like nervous.
That's a lot.
She may be a lot in some way, either a very, important and intimidating. That's what I was getting from it.
Yeah.
And we do see Miles O'Brien at the very end. He hands them this sort of remote control that Rick Colby tilts down. So to me, that moment at the very end of the scene, I was like, wait, what is this device about? This little clicker that he hands. But
that's
we don't
for
really
her quarters,
know yet.
Right? We don't.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
We don't really know exactly what it's going to do, but we can tell that Miles has created something, this device that's going to be like cool.
Yeah.
So I thought that was neat.
Yeah.
And the fact that Rick tilted down to it, that there was a shot.
Yeah.
That was
so that
even
totally indicates there's something important about
something
it.
About this is. Yeah.
To be. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where do we go next? Airlock?
Yeah.
Airlock, I think.
We're in the airlock. And yes. we have this. Well, this is the first time that we see Melora. Mm-hmm. But we see kind of like she's struggling. She has this metal framework that's around her body. And mm-hmm. that's helping her walk. She has a cane. Like an exoskeleton. Like an exoskeleton, exactly.
Yeah.
And she has this cane or walking stick. And you can tell there's some physical exertion. I mean, she's really... Yeah, I mean, she's putting a lot of elbow grease in just to move forward, basically.
Yeah.
But it's a cool shot. We do see Dax and Bashir pop into this scene, mm-hmm. and they've got everything ready to go. They've got the chair there. Melora introduces herself. She's reporting for duty, and it's unfortunate, but it's Dax that says, "Can I help?" Which is the one thing that should not have been said to her, because my goodness, the look that Melora, and the way Melora says that, "I'm fine, thank you." It's very curt. It's very short. It's rude. Yes. And then it cuts to Bashir.
It's just flat out rude.
Bashir does an eye roll, a bit of an eye. Bashir's like, "Oh God, she did it. She asked if she needed help," kind of a look. But clearly this is something that she has under control, and she doesn't want any additional help at all. Nope. When she sits down in the chair, she notices that it's been modified. This is not the design schematics that she sent to Bashir. But Bashir was saying, "Look, I made the modifications to make it even easier for you to get around." And then Melora says, "Well, I've been practicing with the other model." And at that point, Bashir starting to feel a little upset. So he's like, "Okay, then
she's
we can replicate
particular.
The other one." Yes, yeah. Yes, we can replicate the other design. And she goes, no, I'll just adapt. You know, so again, right off the bat, the tone is set.
Intimidating.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
She's so.
So there's a big chip.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she's passive aggressive.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All the walls are up. The armor's on. It's
Yeah. Yeah, she's ready for battle. She's ready for battle at any given moment. She's ready to give it.
And honestly, if she came at me, she wouldn't win.
That's right. Nice. Thank you, Terry.
I agree with you. She wouldn't win.
I agree with you.
She'd be out.
That's funny.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, that attitude, though, is a little tempting. But I liked how we saw Bashir and Dax. It's kind of like, we're just going to be ducks. It rolled off her back.
Whatever. Yeah.
That's her not ours.
Yeah.
Well, we do continue in the corridor. Dax says to Melora that she's going to accompany her on this trip, mapping trip that she's come out to do. And Melora says, "I don't want any help. No, thank you. I don't need help."
When she does do the mapping mission as the nude cartographer, she's nude. She doesn't need anyone in the shuttle with her.
Yes.
Exactly. Oh, she's naked.
She's naked.
That's the whole reason why she does it solo. She's nude.
Right. Yes.
We do get to her quarters, though, and she kind of curtly takes that remote device that we saw earlier and says goodnight.
Curtly takes? Don't you mean snatches?
Snatches,
I know, right?
Yes.
And can we also add, because we have not said this, but she is an ensign. So it is it is even more rude that she's talking to her superiors in the way that she is.
That's true. Yes. That's true. We see a little bit of that later with Sisko as well. She's even snappy with Commander Sisko. So, yes.
Absolutely.
Correct. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But she rolls into her quarters with her remote control, and there's Bashir and Dax, a little speechless after first meeting her.
Yeah.
And then we go into Quarks.
One thing we forgot to say, though, her issue is she wants to pilot that runabout solo, right? So she doesn't want anyone else to be there with her. If we didn't,
she's
spell
fine
out completely
by herself,
all by her lonesome.
And ensigns cannot go all by themselves.
No.
All right.
It's not even. It's the buddy system, right?
It's
like,
the buddy system.
Well, that's partly. Yeah. Do you really want to be flying around in space all by
yourself? Oh my God! Yes. Hell no. No.
No. I mean, even John DeLancey, who sails to like very far away places, has, you know,
tries to always have
another person with them. Yeah.
Even I get on, you know, Southwest Airlines and they've got a co-pilot. I mean,
what?
Come on.
A co-pilot.
Even Southwest will have a co-pilot.
And they know where they're going.
Yes. That's what you're going to say.
They
you take someone with you, Robbie.
I always take someone with me when I fly.
My buddy pass. My Southwest Airlines buddy pass.
I always take my co-pilot just in case.
Exactly. But you need a co-pilot. Like, God forbid, what if there's a medical emergency and the pilot can't fly or something? You need somebody.
Yes.
So Melora's not being smart here. She's being
practical.
Reckless.
Yeah, she's not a team player.
No.
She doesn't understand the difference between we're not trying to take over and treat you like an invalid. We're just, this is the buddy system. This is what we do.
Yeah, this is what anybody would do. Same applies to someone who doesn't have the issues that you're dealing with. Same would apply to anyone. So
yeah, but devil's advocate is she's faced so much stress and so many hindrances and roadblocks in her past as a Starfleet person, and that she now just says, look, let me make this easy on everybody. I'm going to do this solo. You don't need to, you know, micromanage me. I'll go do this by myself. So nobody has to have an issue with my mobility disability. I can handle it myself.
I think right away you can see that every single one of us, even though whatever our reactions are, we're incredibly patient.
Mm-hmm.
Let it slide off of us, her attitude and her adjustment to learn to trust that we're going to treat her as an equal.
Right.
Yeah.
But I also think that when she goes on a mission on her own in a shuttle or any type of vessel, she turns off the grav. You know what I'm saying? So that's how she's piloting, like floating around piloting and doing all her work. So she's more comfortable that way.
Right.
As well,
but
so.
Again, she's an ensign.
She's an ensign. Okay. I get it. That's still an officer, most junior, but still an officer.
Yes. All right. So we go to Quarks next. I really love Quarks. So I want to get to Quarks fast.
You love this B storyline?
I do. I decided in this watching this episode, I love Ferengi stories. I love Armin Shimmerman. I do.
Right?
And I've heard.
I do too.
Like, I've heard this rumor that a lot of people don't like Ferengi stories on
DS9.
Are you
serious?
I have. Like, oh no, we don't want to. Yes, I have. And I don't understand it because I find them fascinating. I find Armin's performance
always
entertaining, always. And all of the Ferengis, I think.
They write really well for him. Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
He hardly ever has a clunker.
No, he's great in this episode, as always. We do see Quark. He's got a bracelet looking kind of thing, like a gold bracelet that
I love that. I want that bracelet.
It was pretty, wasn't it?
Except for that I know it's just, you know, plastic with
gold
paint on it.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
If it were real, I'd be like, I would never take it off.
Yeah, it's a great looking bracelet. And he's talking to some alien we'll learn is named Ashrock. And Ashrock thanks him for returning the bracelet. It is part of the Ring of Paltrus, he says.
There's 80 of them. There's 80 of them.
That have been lost or misplaced. And Quark's got his hands on it. And he says, sure, you can have this. Happy to give it to you for 199 bars of gold pressed latinum. And then as they're about to have another drink, Quark steps to the side and this kind of duck-billed alien steps out of the darkness, and Quark panics. So we know right away this is, they've got some history, and this is not good for Quark. And he runs. I love how Armin sort of freezes and then grabs a container, goes back, here, drinks
waddle,
on me.
Waddle.
Yeah, waddles over, gives the drink to Ashrock, the bracelet guy, and then runs back to the duck-billed guy and pretends to be very happy to see him. I love how Quark says, you look great. You're tan, you're toned. It was very funny. Made me laugh.
Did you find it weird in the earlier part when he's closing the deal? Ashrock says, I heard you drive a hard bargain. Quark says, shall we celebrate our closing the deal with another drink? There's no dialogue from Ashrock. There's a weird, Ashrock brings his elbow up and then goes to the left and then puts it down and then he raises his drink. And I was like, oh, is that the universal way of like, I agree on the deal. We don't handshake.
Yeah, it's like a handshake.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but that's
it.
Not. Did you?
I his liked
species.
It.
Okay. All right.
For his species, that's a.
Right. It's like when they came up with the thing of clapping like this instead of clapping like that.
I don't have a problem with that. I do like that. I just don't like the angle it was shot at because it's just awkward the way they were stacked
that's
over
fair
each
enough.
Other. I like
well,
it
that's
if
fair enough.
You know, faced on where they're.
It was hard to tell where they were doing it first.
Yeah, I'd rather have a traditional two shot. Hello, you know.
Then
that's
you
all.
Need to showcase it a little more. Then it's clear. You don't have to say what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
If it, like you're saying, Garrett, if it was shot from another angle.
Yeah.
I'm going to start
for people
elbow
who need
bumping.
It spelled out like for you.
Right.
But the twins here, we got it right. Away.
We got it.
Whatever.
I got it.
Whatever. I would like a more elaborate elbow thing. Maybe like how NBA basketball players like greet each other with the elbow and then a little flick of the hand, a little shimmy shim.
But that is an NBA thing, and they're in space. And this is an alien. They're not basketball players.
We had some aliens, Terry, on our show that I think it was Neelix that talked to some alien species that he was familiar with. And as they talked, they did like
weird hand movements and stuff.
Like, nice to meet you. And they would do all these moves.
Oh, my word.
And it was amazing. And Ethan Phillips was, you know, communicating with this alien. And it was hilarious. This reminded me of that. Just a little elbow bump. It's like, they're different species.
Mm-hmm.
But we do find out at the end of the scene, Quark goes back over to the duck-billed guy, whose name is Fallot. We learn.
Yeah.
Fallot. And we learn from Fallot that he's come here not to have a good time, not to hang out, not to do anything productive. He's going to kill Quark. That's why
Well,
here.
That could be productive
it
for
could
him.
Be productive.
For him. To-do list.
Quark.
Check number one.
Yes. Yeah. The scene ends with, I've come to kill you, Quark.
And how about that makeup?
That's what I mean. The duck bill thing or whatever it is. It's like,
the nose is attached to the chin. What a nightmare.
How does he eat?
That's my point.
Messy.
I kept thinking
Quark
about
makes a point of saying how messy he eats.
Oh, God. I felt so bad for that actor. I kept thinking at lunch. Oh, my God. At lunch, he has to pull that thing out of the way and then sideways whatever food he's eating
straw.
For lunch.
I bet you anything.
Yeah, like
protein shake.
Pureed lunch, and then drink it. That's the only
Or maybe
way.
An IV. Maybe he got nutrition through an IV.
You know what? Stage 4 was right next to the infirmary.
There you go.
The Paramount Infirmary, which I thought was really great.
This is very good. Very
for
convenient
flu shot.
For you
my flu shot every year. It was right there.
Terry, did you feel safer knowing that it was right
I
there?
I did.
I knew you did.
I did.
Yeah.
Also, Russ made me feel safer.
Oh, Russ. God. Robbie, we got to talk. Is Russ still around? Is he still around?
I don't know. I haven't seen him for decades.
Russ was their security guard, Robbie.
He was
the little shorter African American gentleman with the glasses on, and
I had a fan. I had a scary fan.
Uh huh.
And she signed in to work, and they didn't catch anything scary about her.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she had given me some letters and a book, and then I called the office and said, help, this person's scaring me. I want you to see what they did.
Yeah.
And at that point, we had security guards, but they weren't as
serious official.
Yeah. But once I got that stuff, then they got kind of serious. And one gentleman one of the security guards let this gal on the set because she said, no, 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 I'm a friend of Terry's. He let her on after the thing went out not to let this girl on the set. And I, seeing her on the set, I kind of freaked out because it was scary. Like it was suicidal, scary stuff, right? Ooh. And I was thinking, oh God, don't do a Romeo Juliet or murder-suicide thing. That's where I was at with how terrifying this was.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
That gentleman got fired and Russ got put on.
Oh, that's how Russ got there.
So Russ got the job after the other one failed to do his duty. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And boy, that man was mad at me, but I was like, dude.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's your job.
You got to take that stuff very seriously.
You do. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we don't even need to go in all the stories that have happened to personalities and actors. And
gosh, I can't even imagine coming onto set and seeing my stalker there, standing there, beaming and smiling like, I'm here. And you're like, how did you get on our closed set? What?
Yes.
A memo was sent out to everybody. The memo. Who didn't get the memo? One person, clearly.
It's kind of like Fallot. It would be like that's how Quark felt when Fallot arrived.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's like, why didn't security stop Fallot from coming in here?
Well, and I think some people just don't take you seriously because they just think, oh, it's not that big of a deal. He was pish posh, Terry. It's going to be fine. It's like,
pish posh.
Terry, you could have been like Quark dealing with Fallot when you saw your fan on set. You said, hey, you look really tan. Looks like you've lost some weight. You've been working out. You look great.
Well, that's terrifying for you, Terry, and terrifying for Quark in this
moment. Way more terrifying. This guy was scary, wasn't he?
He was scary. Yes, he was.
He was scary calm.
Yeah. What I love about the actor playing Fallot is that he plays it so, he's so chill through this all.
Yeah.
Not,
he's
never
very
once
confident,
does he
relax.
He doesn't play it like, I'm going to kill. He doesn't play it like the, guy. He plays it all like, no.
It's worse.
But, yeah, it's even worse that way, isn't it?
I'm going to kill you.
With a smile on his face, I'm going to kill you. Pretty much.
Next scene, we go into Sisko's office and Dax is there and Bashir's there. They're filling him in very briefly on Melora wanting to do this, all her stuff alone. When they look out in ops and there's the wheelchair rolling in with Melora and they exit, they come out because there's steps going up to Sisko's office. So they go to try to meet her outside and she's a little offended that they left her out of this meeting and started without her. Sisko says, well, they were just discussing you wanting to pilot the ship alone. And Melora gets up out of her mobile wheelchair. She struggles up the steps and they end up sitting inside Sisko's office. They go back in. And it's a great scene where she sort of explains how badly she wanted to, you know, be one of the few Elysians that leave the home world and explore the stars. She's got a beautiful, very inspiring kind of speech about this dream of hers and how proud she is that she made the dream happen without relying on anybody else. And I thought she did a great job in that speech. She was great.
She's a terrific actress.
Yeah.
Yeah. And gorgeous woman, terrific actress. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's interesting, guys, is that there's no, you know, Bashir's in this scene, but he never says a word in this scene, in these scenes, right? He just kind of, he's there for window dressing. He doesn't say a thing.
Yeah, he's just a pretty face. That's right.
And we've all been there.
I've been in plenty of scenes where I just don't say anything.
Or one line, you know, 2 pages into a 5-page scene and you're thinking, oh, did I spaced out? Where are we at?
Yes. Yes. Well, Sisko tells Melora at the end, he says he's decided that Dax is going to have to join her on this mission. Yeah. She's not happy about it, but she accepts that decision and tells Dax, you know, when do you want to leave? And Dax is like, well, whatever works for your schedule. And she says, 0700 and takes off. So Dax and Melora are going to be a team, although Melora's not happy about it at this point.
No.
But I love just to kind of step back for a second. I love the development of Melora and Dax's friendship. That's one of the things that you see Dax being this sort of confidant, this kind of another woman to talk to about all of the feelings that Melora's having.
Yeah.
She's very mm-hmm. honest with Dax in a way that's really nice. So this is the beginning of their team up for the episode, and they're going to head out in the morning.
Do you two know the backstory behind this character, Melora?
No, do you?
Yes.
Tell us.
This character was supposed to be the series regular science officer of Deep Space Nine.
No. What?
Yes. Not Dax, but Melora was going to be the series regular. And
wow.
Yep. But then what happened was they kept saying, oh, but gosh, the amount of money we have to spend every time recreating the effect of her floating around is going to be just too much to keep that going. So they ditched it and they put in Dax instead. So Terry Farrell, you have to be thankful for your role because this was the action. Daphne Ashbrook was supposed to be the series regular for the entire
time. She was. I might have known that at the time, but I didn't remember it now.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone would have been insensitive enough to like go, yeah, I'll right on the heels of us almost firing you for a year. That's who we really wanted. Great.
Great. Thanks, guys. But I wonder if the character was conceived, but the actress, like Terry, you might have played Melora. They may have ended up casting you as the science officer in the role of Melora instead of in the role of Dax. Like, I don't know if the actress was attached that early on. Maybe.
Okay,
but,
yeah, I
but
see
you
that.
Know what
so
I
you're
mean?
Saying, yeah. So they probably said that we want to have a disabled science officer.
Yeah.
And they could have still cast you as her back then just as easily. Yes.
Probably and then you would have had to put on the rig to fly on the wires and do all that. And,
and you would have been making out with Bashir flying in the air.
Well, I already made out with him. Been there, done that.
Been there, yes, done that.
Last season. And I would have taken Bashir's medicine.
So we're in a corridor next. Mm. Bashir's walking down this corridor. I just got to say, Marvin Rush, Rick Colby did a beautiful job of this hallway and kind of the framing of it. It was just a beautiful shot. He's kind of slowly, cautiously approaching her door. But it's a nice, quiet moment. I just thought it was very pretty.
Here's a question. Does the hallway always have blue neon lights in there?
Or
is
I don't
the first
remember
time
that.
Yeah.
I don't remember either. It looked different to me, too.
It sure did.
Maybe it was some kind of thing to help gravity. I don't know. But
maybe.
It doesn't make sense because she's in the wheelchair. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it was that.
Maybe
I think
they just
wanted a pretty color.
Yeah,
okay.
We're in this corridor, and this corridor has blue light.
Blue, yeah. Okay. It was very
pretty.
Yeah,
you're right, though. It was really pretty.
Yeah,
very pretty. He comes up to the door, and then we hear this sort of he rings the doorbell or whatever, and we hear this noise like a vacuum cleaner shutting down or something like that. And the door opens, and there she is in her chair, and Bashir says, oh, I think I just heard the low-gravity generator go off. So now we know. What was that low gravity generator? What does it do? I don't know. For me, I was like, what is that?
Can
it's the clicker.
Say, right. But what if you installed it, would you not try it out?
Yes. I talk about that.
100%.
I was going to talk about that later.
Okay.
But yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Well, Robbie, you saying that it was the sound of a vacuum cleaner shutting off. All I can think about was the guys in post, the guys doing Foley, going like, what do we use? Hey, vacuum cleaner shutting off. Bring your Dyson from the home. Yeah, bring it in. Hey.
Who's got an Electrolux? I want to bet, like, which one do we like better?
Yes, I don't like the Dyson. I like the Electrolux. Yes. Let's do that one. Yeah,
Hoover is the best.
That's the ticket.
That's a fun job, Foley, I think. You're just sitting there, like, coming up with sounds
I have
and
a
sound
effects. Yeah, I have a friend who is a director in
stuff?
Those. She's amazing. Yeah.
So cool.
Very cool. Well, we go inside, and she's in her chair. Bashir talks about hearing the low gravity. He tries to be really nice to her when he comes in. He's trying to make small talk, talks about her photos in her quarters, asks, is this your boyfriend, husband? So he's kind of fishing, he's flirting a little bit. And she is not having any of it. She's kind of still rude and, you know, pushing him away, basically.
Not
and he calls
even
her.
Kinda.
Not, yeah, not even kinda. She's just cold and curt. And so he calls her on it. And he says, you know, you try to keep everyone away and keep them on the defensive and push them away. And you're really good at it. And I loved his speech there. He just lays it all on the table. Mm-hmm. And she kind of admits it. She says something like, well, it's always worked until now.
Yeah.
Which I thought was great.
Yeah.
Great.
Really
line.
Good scene.
Yeah. And he ultimately, at the end of the scene, she softens a bit. He asks her out to dinner at some new Klingon restaurant that's just opened.
Yeah. And this, I just want to say, agrees. This is excellent. It's like rom-com. These are rom-com lines, romantic comedy lines of them kind of, you know, getting that initial attraction to each other, and her finally relenting and letting some of those walls crumble just a little bit to let him in just a tiny bit.
It felt authentic.
Yes, it did.
It really did. I mean, yeah, I love that about it. It really felt believable, and it made you like her. Mm-hmm. And it was so great that they gave that to Bashir to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like he's ready for a romance.
Yeah,
he's been catting around, and it's like she is girlfriend material,
not a date, not a date night.
No.
Yeah, it was a very cute scene and felt very, like you said, authentic.
Yeah. So we're in Quark's right now, and up in the corner, there's a table, and Fallot's sitting there alone. And Quark shows up with this elaborate dinner. He's got all this stuff. He puts down a bowl of soup. Fallot's like, I didn't even order dinner. He takes the soup and just dumps the soup out and breaks it. He breaks the dish. And Quark's like, well, okay, don't spoil your appetite with soup. You know what you want. So how about? And he pulls out a dish of Vulcan mollusks sauteed in Rombolian butter. Now, this is the funny thing. He reaches in to grab, and these are big mollusks. If you watch, he reaches in and picks one out to act like he's about to eat it. But in the shot where it cuts to him actually eating it, he only touches his mouth with his finger almost. Like nothing goes in, and he acts like he's chewing it. Do you guys notice that at all? Like,
I didn't.
It was
catch
too
that.
Hard to fit the. It was so big, it couldn't even fit in the thing. That's why. So
I will say, like, you guys know how, you know, when you've got an eating scene and it's very complicated to remember when you're eating for continuity.
Exactly.
Like, oh, did I pick up the fork here? And did I,
right.
You know, how much did I eat?
Yeah.
So a lot of times as an actor, you're just like, I'm
not going to eat it
fiddle with my
it.
Salad. I'm never going to take a bite.
Right.
I've even seen actors like they'll, you know, take a piece of the chicken or whatever, they'll start to eat and then they'll talk.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. You just have to definitely plan around it. It's almost like if we're doing a scene together, Robbie, and you're about to do a monologue, that would be the moment that I would put it. It still has to be something small because you don't want your reaction shots to be going.
Yeah, exactly.
Correct. Yeah. Exactly. It's got to be a really tiny piece of meat that you're chewing on. You're right.
It's true.
So after he tries this mollusk, then Quark brings a couple of Dabo girls in saying, have you played Dabo before? These ladies can teach you in the rules
art.
Of how to play.
Yes.
Yeah, the art of playing Dabo. They're going to give you strategy. And then Quark tries it.
And they're
going to
tutor him.
They're going to tutor him. They're going to tutor him. Exactly. So basically, Quark tries to, you know, make a toast at the end. He says, so allow me to propose a toast to old friends. And Fallot says, old debts. So now we know he only cares
He's
about
He's not giving up on this. Next scene, we go to the Klingon restaurant, which is amazing.
Yes.
Bashir's ordering from the scary Klingon. He orders, I think, worms. He orders some mushrooms and potatoes, I guess. That's what I got from the cutaway. He's ordering all these Goktek or something, Rocht. He's ordering Glotzt and Zilmkach or something. But it was basically worms, mushrooms, and potatoes. And Melora looks at the worms after they're served, and she doesn't like them. They're not fresh enough. And she yells in Klingon at this server guy. And he actually, they go back and forth for a bit. And then he smiles and he's very impressed
and
with
he said,
her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just sort of interrupt you. I want to just say, this is the translation of the Klingon. I have it. Okay.
Okay.
So Melora says, you call this live? And then he says back to her, "What's your problem, lady?" She says, "This slop you call food is the problem." He says, "If you don't like it, don't eat it." She says, "I want to see the blood running through the veins." And that's when he says, "I like a customer who knows what she wants," in English. But the prior Klingon is translated.
All the Klingon was translated. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, he tosses the old, the dead worms, I guess.
He just throws the whole plate behind him, right?
Yes. He's like, what about that?
He's got like a handful of what is clearly fresher worms.
Yes.
And sticks it on a plate for them. Oh, and, God. Yeah, it's kind of amazing. She had to learn Klingon for that scene.
She did. She sounded very
well, just those lines, guys. Yeah,
she but did she, good though.
She did a good job.
Yes, it was good. But when you say she had to learn Klingon, it's like, yeah, I had to say "Toi Dashimashite," and I had to learn Japanese. It was you learned how to say "Toi Dashimashite."
But Terry, you have to agree with me. There have been guest stars that have come on with a few lines of some alien language, and they're struggling with it. Like, she made it look like she knew it back and forth.
She's a terrific actor, right?
Yeah, she
really is.
She is.
She
did
great.
This isn't her first circus.
No.
No.
Clearly. Or rodeo.
Or rodeo.
That's right.
Or Klingon restaurant.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Complete your staining project with Pittsburgh Paints and Stains now at Menards. Stain in one coat with Ultra Advanced Semi-Transparent Stain. It's a stain and sealant in one that can be applied to damp wood and on hot, sunny days, allowing you to clean and stain your deck in one day. Save big money on Pittsburgh Paints and Stains and head into Menards to get your staining project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There's a little time cut here, and we start on the very last gummy worm. I guess it had to have been like a gummy worm.
It
like
is.
Like a candy. Okay.
I had to eat them in one of my Klingon episodes.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And the hard thing is, well, for me anyway, they had the earthworms so that the camera saw the earthworms, and then Pat moved the earthworms out and then put the gummy worms so that when I reached down to grab one to eat it, that it didn't look like it changed, right?
Yeah.
But the smell of the earthworms, which I love in my garden.
But and, not you know, on a plate.
No, no.
Yeah.
A sack of earthworms. It's like, oh, it's just.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It was gross. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was definitely, it looked like a gummy worm, the last one. But then I started looking at it closer and I thought, it actually looks more like a fishing lure.
Because
it was so perfect looking. And the perfect looking things are fishing
are
lures,
gummy
right?
Ones.
Gummy worms aren't as, the person making the candy
so
isn't
proud
like,
of it.
Yeah. So, okay. It was nice.
Well,
to see
Bashir eats the gummy worm as he tells, he you know, spins this yarn, this tale of when he was a young boy and went on a trip with his father. Mm-hmm. And his father was a diplomat, I think. He meets some young girl in, what was the planet? It was they went to Avernia 2, I think, was the place they went.
Yeah.
Anyway, he meets this young girl and she's very sick. So his father decides to go get some medicine, but while he's gone, the young girl dies. And later, when his father returns, they find out from some of the people there that she could have been saved by some simple herb that grew nearby. And that's when Melora asks if that's when he started studying medicine, and he continues about his life story. No, he wanted to be a tennis pro. And
was hilarious. I'm like, what?
I know, right? Yeah. He looks more like a golf pro, but not a tennis pro,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. 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 Very funny. Well, it didn't go well for him. He said his first major tournament after the very first serve by a real tennis pro, he realized that's not for me. Yeah. And that's when he decided to study medicine. And so his stories are really charming her. You just see her eyes glowing and her smile. And the scene ends with a very long stare between them and smiles all around. And, and she's like, well, I should get some sleep before the mission tomorrow. So, yeah, more rom-com moments, I guess. Like, nice connecting. Great chemistry between the two of them.
Yeah. Almost that you think she'd come back, but...
Yeah.
We're in the corridor, and now we see Dax heading towards Melora's room. She rings the doorbell. There's no reply. Dax uses her security access to bypass the door lock, and she goes in. There's no...
Okay, were you worried? When I used the bypass, watching the show again, I was thinking, oh, no. Oh, no. If she and Bashir are in there...
You're going to walk in on... No, I did not think that.
That's what I thought. I know it's weird how little details you forget the show, but I just thought, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no. What's going to happen?
you thought you were walking in on anti-grav nookie is what you thought.
Yes, oh, I did. Okay.
All right.
Kind of wanted to see that.
So, well, there's no Bashir and there's no Ensign Paslar either. Dax asks the computer to locate where Melora is. Well, she's on docking level 22, section 14, which Dax is like, what? It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Dax does head towards the area where the computer tells her that Melora is. And when she gets close to where Melora is, we do see that the wheelchair is sort of just sitting there empty.
Mm-hmm. Tipped over.
And then Melora basically has fallen, and her exoskeleton is in some weird, like, you know, it just keeps moving. All you can think is poor child right there. Just like the hand, the leg, and it won't stop. It's got a glitch. You know
what I thought of when I saw because she was on her side and her leg was going up sideways and her arm was doing something. And I thought about Jane Fonda's workout from the 80s.
Yes.
You remember the Jane Fonda workout?
Yes. I used to own it.
Yeah.
Yes. Everybody did.
Right. Oh, I remember fasting for a week before a job and doing that every single day and not eating for a week. And I lost 10 pounds. I was like,
That's what Melora was trying to do. She was doing some Jane Fonda on the ground. That's all I could think of.
Dax runs to her side, turns off the Jane Fonda workout, mode that her exoskeleton's in, turns that off. And Melora's like, no, it's my fault. I decided I wanted an extra astrometric array. And then I came here to pick it up. And I wasn't thinking. All I could think of was the gamma quadrant, and I fell and all this stuff happened.
And it's because those lips, all those parts of the ship, the lips, the doorways, the thresholds are different.
Yes. Okay.
The lips. I'm like, but, going, okay,
what lips?
Back into the rom-com with the lips.
So Dax does assist Melora back into her wheelchair, but this is what I was amazed by. Harry, you pick up that actress like she's a ragamuffin, like she's nothing. You physically picked her up and put her back in.
I was really strong then. I do have to admit.
So buff back
then.
I'm
only 3 inches
taller than her. She's like 5'9".
She's not a small person.
No, she's not a small person. I mean, she's a thin woman for sure. But
even at 5'9", she's got to be 120, 130 pounds, whatever.
At least.
Harry, you picked her up like she was literally a doll. Like she was not, you would
have. I was kind of impressed with myself, I have to admit.
There was no exertion. I was watching Terry's face. There's no exertion on her face. This looked like she literally picked up a Barbie doll and went, yeah, get back in your chair, like that.
That's how trolls roll.
I guess.
Thank you for being so impressed.
Why are you not Robbie has no expression.
Because
his face,
I believe in Terry Farrell.
Oh my God.
The strength of her strength.
I could not
and
do that today.
Strength of character. I believe in Terry.
Well, the times that
had nothing to do with it. I got to start doing sit-ups again, man. That just made me feel like there's no way I could do that today.
Terry, we had an episode on Voyager where I was told my character had to pick up a guest star that was injured. And they said, you're going to pick him up and you're gonna drag him out of there. And this guy was 6'4", 240. And I was like, pick him. Are you kidding me? I can't even drag him. So I told the actor, I said, you've got to push with your foot as well. I can't even drag the guy. It was like dead weight.
Then you're forced to do that weird fake looking thing.
Yeah. But because I know it's so difficult, you did a really good job.
Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Well, after Terry Farrell's, amazing display of strength, we cut to the infirmary where Bashir is examining Melora. She's fine. She's all good. She's very embarrassed and she's mad at herself.
Yeah.
And he's got a nice moment where he talks about how no one can do anything alone. None of us can.
Right.
We're not totally independent. None of us. We need each other.
Yeah.
And so more relationship building here. Nice sensitive moment. Yeah. Bashir says, you can depend on us. Mm-hmm. And you can feel her attitude starting to change here. You know, you can feel it between Dax coming in to help her and Bashir. Yeah, she's softening for sure.
Yeah, I like that last few lines. Bashir's like, well, now what do the rest of us have to do to convince you? And she says, of what? And Bashir says that you can depend on us. So he's trying to get her to open up even further than she has. But yes, we do see some warming of the glacier freeze.
Yep. We're back in the corridor next. I love this corridor. I will say once again, beautiful lighting.
Beautiful blue light.
Nice slow walk and talk with Bashir and Melora. They get to her door and he's a little hesitant to go inside. And she basically invites him in. He says, no, I don't need to go in. I know you enjoy the low gravity and give you your space. And she's like, don't let that stop you. Big fella. Ooh,
exactly like that. She did it just like that.
Don't let that stop you.
And that's how you got Rebecca.
Exactly. That's my move. That is my style. So smooth.
Saucy Robbie.
It was that coy lip purse that you did at the end. Whatever the hell that was. That's the one that sold Rebecca. She's like, oh my God.
Totally. He's a keeper. He is a keeper.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. I got it. I got moves. They go inside Melora's room. She turns on the low gravity and she starts to float. Now, this is where I have to pause.
If she
is being pressed down by gravity so hard that when they adjust it, she's able to float, then Bashir, who's not pressed down by gravity, who already has some lift in his natural state, when she turns off the gravity, he would have gone boom. He would have hit the ceiling like a rock.
I
agree. Yeah.
I expected her to have to pull him down.
Right.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He was completely stationary.
And she's floated.
But weren't his hands on the wall though at the time?
Yeah. But I'm saying if it's so hard that she is being like immobilized by the gravity,
right,
then the adjustment she makes is going to make him shoot through the roof.
Right.
And the science of gravity didn't make sense to me.
Okay.
No. And so even if he's holding on to the wall, Garrett, it seems like his body should have gone up.
And then she would stop. Yeah. And she would stop him like, hey. Yeah. That would have been cool. Right.
I think she should keep that line too. Hey.
hey, whoa, big fella. Like that. But she does start floating first and he's just watching in amazement. And then she tells him, just give a little push. And he flies up too. And we've got this beautiful floaty romantic thing where they're floating. And she does say while they're floating in air, she says, the picture was my brother. So
that was the okay.
That's
giving him the okay.
Fantastic romantic kiss.
Oh,
like a Disney style, they're enwrapped in each other, floating.
It's kind of rotating and everything. I love it.
Wasn't that kind of Disney?
It was.
Yeah, it was. It did feel very Disney. It also reminded me
of the Voyager episode where Tom Day Harris of Honor, and B'Elanna, Day of Honor, where Robbie's character and B'Elanna Torres, Roxanne Dawson's character, are in space, they're running out of oxygen, and they're floating together with each other.
And we had to wrap around each other, and we just sort of, the last moment where we both think we're going to die.
It's sweet. Yeah. It's a sweet moment.
It's sweet.
It is sweet.
They stole it for Voyager from this
episode. This episode, yes.
Probably.
I agree.
Stole that idea.
They or did. Any number of other movies.
Or Disney.
Or Disney.
We go inside the runabout next, and the runabout has gone whoosh, coming through the wormhole. Melora and Dax are hanging out. It's girl time. The ladies are starting to bond. And this is a part of the episode I wish there was more of. I wish there was more of Melora and Dax, hanging out and having that point of view. You know, Melora and Dax are flying the shuttle together. Melora asks for some music to be played. And I love this song, by the way.
This composer, Delvok, the Vulcan composer. I kept thinking, why hasn't somebody, maybe somebody's already done this, maybe someone is already inspired to do this, taken what you can hear from this particular scene and extrapolated upon that to make a full Vulcan Delvok album or something like of that.
Yeah. Oh, that would be cool.
Wouldn't that be cool?
It was beautiful. It was really beautiful. Was. And I don't know who composed the music for this episode, but I particularly liked it. It was really good. But Melora asked Dax about romance in Starfleet. Like what does Dax think about romance in Starfleet? And there's one point in the scene where Dax says, yeah, I think there's room for romance in Starfleet. And Melora says, well, you've made it work. And Dax says, now and then. I was like, wait a minute. I want to hear about the romances of Dax. if she's 300 years old, how many love stories has she been through?
Right. Well,
probably plenty, right? But it's even more confusing because after she says now and then, and you ask about if Dax has had romance, then Melora goes, I mean, really work. And then so basically she's saying
not just Tinder dates.
Or booty call
or whatever
kind of a thing, right?
But so, like a real relationship.
But then this makes me think that Dax has had a lot of one night stands as well, right?
Now and then, kind of a thing. 150 years. That's
You got to look back 150 years to get to a real
relationship,
deep relationship.
Yeah. So you've only had Nookie.
That's true because she did when she was Curzon. Remember the episode Dax? She had an affair and they were in love.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true.
That wasn't 150 years ago. I mean, I guess you go like, well, that was an affair, not that's different. Anyway, but
it jumped out at me. I was like, wow. It really, in such a concrete way, I was like, wow, Dax has had a lot of love stories. That's really, I want to know about these love stories.
Yeah. Or is it a commentary on marriage? Then maybe you shouldn't get tie the knot and have anything serious. Because it 150 years ago was when she had a real relationship committed, boyfriend, girlfriend, or married, whatever you want to call it. That's a long time.
Well, they do talk about a lot of different variations. What if you're stationed apart? What if, you know, a lot of practicalities. And ultimately, Dax says she thinks it's worth it. She says, what's the alternative to not?
Yeah.
Have love to not experience this.
Yeah.
So it's a great conversation about relationships and balancing it with work and how important is love and all that. I like that scene a lot, Terry. I thought you did an awesome job. It was great.
Oh my gosh. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think there's an element too of like live in the moment.
Yeah.
If romance is love is coming your way.
Don't let it
pass you by, right? Yeah. Enjoy it for the moment, for what it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is when they should play that Night of the Roxbury theme song. What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, that's when this should play at the end of the scene, like fade out.
Garrett Wong musical interlude. It's not quite the same as our Delvok music, but... It's not as romantic as the Delvok composition, the Vulcan love theme. Next is the security office where we finally get to see Odo in this episode. We haven't really seen Odo.
But
Quark comes in begging Odo for help with Fallot. Fallot's going to kill him. Odo knows about Fallot already. He's seen the manifest and knows all about him being in jail and, you know, thinks that Quark was probably part of this hijacking of the Romulan shipment, and Odo's kind of accuses Quark of betraying him. Like, well, maybe he wants to kill you because you betrayed him.
Right.
And this is where Quark, when he finally says he's going to kill me, and he comes over behind him And you see Odo smile for a
oh my god, it was brilliant.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, brilliant. He had a little daydream about what that might be like. Yes.
And Quark is like, what? What? And Odo's like, nothing, just a passing thought. That's all. Yes.
So funny. Good. Renee did such a great job.
Didn't he? Mm.
Yeah. Quark is begging for Odo to do something. Odo says, I will do my job.
Right.
And then Quark leaves. And Odo finishes with, unfortunately. So, very funny. Those two are very funny.
They're great together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. We go to the infirmary. Bashir's studying some kind of neuron on a screen. Melora comes in. And he's basically revisited some old studies and found a solution that might fix her problem. He's found a way to increase the neural output from the brain so that she might be able to walk. And she's just in shock. She can't believe it.
Yeah. She seems stunned. Like, it doesn't know how to react.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Important to say that this is the basis of the work of Nathaniel Taros, who'd been working on it, but didn't continue with the work. Yes. So it's important. Bashir. Yeah.
It's important to say Nathaniel Taros because he's not a real person. And we just sort of make sure that it's important to give him credit.
No, I'm just saying that.
No, I'm kidding.
Bashir pulling in our this world.
Out of his butt. In our world, Nathaniel, what's his name again?
Taros.
Taros. I just love the seriousness with which it's important. It's very important to give Nathaniel Taros credit.
I should have said this.
You know we're talking about a pretend place.
I know that. I'm just saying that we don't want to think that Bashir is a Superman, that he discovered this stuff on his own.
Oh, no.
He's working off of someone else's work.
Bashir is Superman, for sure.
But you're
sure.
Right. But Robbie is very funny. Yes. The way I was like, that's very important to know.
It was funny.
Than Nathaniel Taros.
I could not let that go.
No, I'm glad you did it. Except for it's probably not as funny right now since we beat it with a dead horse.
Okay, I'm going to say right now, Terry, if you weren't here, Robbie would not have said what he just said. But I think that he's become a little bit more rambunctious because of you, actually. So hey, stop chewing gum. Yay! And then, hey, you're being so serious about that. So I think it's your influence.
Yes. I did have to apologize the last time, though, because I teased you about the gum like way too many times.
Do you know that
spit it out and then I finally let it go.
Yeah, I spit it out with you, Terry, but... But when Armin has been on the podcast, I have chewed gum once or twice, and the fans have noticed. They're like, really? Terry's going to be mad. Terry's going to be mad because just because Terry's not there doesn't mean he can chew that gum.
You're such a bad boy.
I know.
He's a rebel.
I've been scolded by you and our listeners now. Thank you very much.
I love our listeners.
Yes.
Okay, where are we, Robbie?
We go to the security office next. So she may have a cure is the takeaway from that scene.
Right. She may be able to. Yes.
Yes. And it's important to say Nathaniel Taros did the original research. Okay.
So. I want a disclaimer for what the side effects might be for her. Exactly. That's what's bothering me right now.
Yes. Hazy vision, diarrhea, loss of bladder control. It's all kinds of all kinds of side effects.
Itchy skin, loss of hair.
Yes.
Keeps on going.
Yes. Okay.
But you wanted to walk, lady.
That's right. Security office again. Odo is questioning Fallot in this scene. And Fallot says he's not going to kill. He puts it all out there. I'm not going to kill him. He pretends to be innocent.
Yeah.
Odo doesn't have anything to arrest him on, though. He can't hold him or charge him. So. No. Fallot very confidently, with a big smile on his face, walks away. You can't lock a man up for the way he walks. Because Odo says something like, I don't like the way you walk. Very Clint Eastwood.
He says, I can tell a man's intentions by the way he walks. I can always tell a man's intentions by the way he walks. Yes,
that's exactly. All right. So Odo can't do anything.
Nothing.
All right. So we're back on the promenade where Odo watches him walk away. When Quark pops up and he wants some reassurance, he wants to know, did you take care of this? And Odo says, I'm going to keep an eye on the way he walks. And then Odo says something like, Quark's like, I'm going to die. And Odo says, well, don't Ferengi sell parts of your body?
How gross was that? Yeah. That was so disturbing.
And but that is, yes, that is what they do, though. Yes.
Quark says yes, and Odo says, I'll buy a piece of you after you're dead.
I'll buy one.
Just but it is disgusting.
It's disgusting, but Renee's delivery of that line was amazing.
It wasn't like being an organ donor. It wasn't like that.
No, it's like souvenirs.
Like here's his fingernail. Here's a little piece of his knuckle, whatever, right?
What would you do with that? Why is that worth
making a list? Just stop making a list.
I'll stop. But it was very funny, though. It's a funny scene.
It was.
But he says, Odo says, I'm going to give you a comm badge. Here's a comm badge. Keep it with you at all times. Call me the first sign of trouble. Right. Yeah. But his line of I'll buy one is clearly just the way Renee delivered that was hilarious. Like, I'll buy a piece of you. No worries.
It's gross, too.
I'll buy one. Yeah, it is gross.
It's gross. Melora's on a bio bed with things on her forehead. She's got a couple of stickies on her chest that aren't attached to anything. I was like, what the heck are those things for?
They're just there.
They're just there. I guess they're wireless. They don't need to be wired anymore in the future. She's getting this procedure done. Bashir's doing this a neo-analeptic infusion is what he says. And he reassures her it's all going to be okay. And suddenly we see her toes moving underneath the sheet. And then she lifts her leg up and Bashir says, it's working. She says, it's working. They're both excited. And Bashir says, she should be able to walk within an hour. What?
Mm-hmm. That's
He's good.
Now, if this was shot as a comedy, when that leg lifted up, it would have kicked Bashir in the face. It would have been like, bam!
That would have been good. That would have been good. More comedy. Comedy's always, you can't have too much comedy.
Ever
in life.
It's true.
Yes.
Especially the best nowadays.
Yes. Everyone needs to laugh.
Yes. So it's working. We go to ops next. Melora walks in pretty confidently. They're surprised. Sisko and Miles turn their heads and there she is coming up the lift. She's walking right in by herself, starts to deliver the mission report. And then suddenly, very quickly, her legs weaken. Bashir says the first treatment is probably beginning to wear off. She should rest right now, but this is nothing to worry about. So
I do like Avery's reaction when he sees her walking in. He plays that very well, that look that he gives. He's very surprised and excited and happy and all played in one nonverbal look.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nice. And it's also very important to note that Bashir does admit that this was someone else's work, was not his
work. Nathaniel Taros's work.
Nathaniel Taros's. It's important
you know what,
to
Robbie?
Note that.
He's real to me, okay? He's real to me as a fan of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Teros is real to me.
Yes. So, and Bashir thinks that's important as well because he does tell everyone that it's just other people. Nathaniel's work. I just dotted the I's and crossed the T's. But O'Brien says, your name will be in a medical journal for this. And Bashir's response is, yes, I know. So he gets
yes,
it.
I know.
He's basically stealing the important Nathaniel Taros, great work. I just thought that was important to note.
Yes. maybe there'll be an ampersand.
Yes.
And then, Bashir's name underneath.
Yes.
Dr. Julian Bashir, ampersand Dr. Julian Bashir.
Yes.
Experimented on his girlfriend.
Yes,
exactly. With all those horrible side effects of
diarrhea,
nausea, and hair loss. But so we go back to Melora's quarters. Bashir's there again. He does say that with each progressive treatment, you should get stronger. The effects are going to last longer. And then he does also say in the scene when he's talking to her that he thanks her for letting him fly for the very first time. And I know he means it metaphorically, but I was like, they built this technology. They could have all gone and flown around as much as they want. Like, he didn't need her
to
fly.
Bring it to ops. How much fun would that be?
Yes, exactly.
They don't share.
Yes. Yes. We go to Quark's next. Quark walks into his dark quarters, tries to turn on the lights. They don't go on. Spooky. Mm. Very scary. Mm. Just as he starts to run, Phallic grabs him from behind around the neck, starts choking him. Quark offers 199 bars of latinum and Fallot lets him go. But did you notice in the choking, it didn't seem like Fallot's arm was anywhere near an anatomical place that would choke him. And Armin was playing very beautifully, struggling to speak, but the arm was down by his chest or it was.
Avery should have come in and tutored him a little bit. How to choke.
Yeah, maybe. Quark. Maybe. But this was a turning point. Maybe Quark's going to save his life in this mm-hmm. scene. So save his own life. So mm-hmm. we cut back to the
infirmary. So who needs Odo?
Who needs Odo? That's right. Who needs Clint Eastwood? The sheriff. Who needs the sheriff?
The sheriff.
We're back in the infirmary. Melora's getting more treatments. And then she does bring up in the scene, is this going to be, when will it be irreversible? Mm-hmm. When is this treatment going to take away the parts of herself that are who she is?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think she really liked that feeling of the hot bath.
She did.
The floating by herself. There's things that, like my poem, there's parts of herself that are not true to herself.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. She says, I don't feel like myself. She literally says, I just don't, something about this, it just doesn't feel like the real me. And Bashir does understand, but he says the effects are fully reversible for a few more days. After that, though, it will be permanent. Mm-hmm. So now we kind of have a timeline. We know she's got a few more days to make the final decision here. But after that, she's going to be like everybody else. Now we go to the runabout Orinoco. What is it? Runabout?
That sounds good. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Orinoco.
Orinoco. Thank you. Thank you, Terry.
You're welcome.
Melora is standing. They're back on Dax and Melora out on the mission again. Melora's standing at the top of the scene, but then she weakens. She says it's starting to wear off again. So she sits down and basically spills all of her second thoughts to Dax about this. And Dax is the one that brings up this Little Mermaid reference. And Melora says, after that, she says, well, the Little Mermaid lived happily ever after, right? And Dax's response was unclear to me. So I was like, in the Disney movie, it's a happy ending. I don't get what's not happy. So I Googled the real
Hans Christian Andersen version.
Yeah, the Hans Christian Andersen version. And here's what it says. In the Disney movie, Ariel marries Eric and the two live happily ever after. But in Hans Christian Andersen's fairy tale, the Little Mermaid takes the knife and agrees to kill the prince. And when she tries to do it, she finds she can't kill him. So instead, the Little Mermaid sacrifices herself to save his life, and she turns into sea foam.
Whoa.
That's a horrible story.
And most of them were.
That was horrible.
Yikes.
I don't know where mine's in my shed in a box, but I found one of the original. Yeah.
Wow.
I haven't read it because I found it and then I moved from LA out here. But
I have a lot of those books. I have so many
don't
of those books.
Don't you hate that? I can't wait to have my bookshelves up so that I can
read them. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Well, Hans Christian Andersen did not have a happy Little Mermaid tale. So that's where, for me, the whole premise of this episode made sense. It's like, oh, it's a Little Mermaid story. I get it.
Well, and also, and you know, along with that, you can say, well, the Disney ending isn't realistic.
Yeah.
So you could be saying, well, you know, you're going to have, it's, the reality is you're going to be walking. You're not going to be living the life you used to live. And there's always things that if in that situation that you're going to miss.
Yeah. And you're going to end up killing Bashir and turning into sea foam.
Yeah.
That's how that's going to end. So
no, killing herself, which would be fine.
Oh, that's right.
She cannot hurt Bashir. I'd be very upset about that.
That's true. She'd try to kill Bashir. Couldn't do it. And then she'd kill herself and turn into a space foam.
Exactly.
Something like that.
The dreaded space foam. Okay, but we're in the airlock.
We are, but I just want to say another good scene with Dax and Melora. I love these scenes. I think they're great scenes. You guys did a great job, and I love the content. I love what you guys did. So that's all I'm going to say.
Thank you.
Well, in the notes, just online, looking around, digging around, they wanted this character to be recurring.
Surprised she didn't come back.
Yes, yeah, me too. They wanted this to be a recurring character and said, we're going to use...
Did she not want to come back?
I don't know. That's
maybe it didn't work in her schedule.
Who knows?
Maybe not.
Yeah.
Who knows? Okay.
Well, she was so busy doing Jane Fonda workouts that she didn't have time to come to this.
But I think she was also in Doctor Who. Wasn't she in Doctor
was
Who?
She?
Yeah, she was in. She did play in Doctor Who. That's correct.
Oh, cool.
One of the movies, I think, Doctor Who movies. Let us move forward to the airlock where our B storyline continues. Ashrock comes to meet Quark. Quark has Fallot with him. Quark even introduces Fallot to Ashrock as his longtime business partner, which is true if you think of it that way. The transaction happens. So all those awesome 42 rings go to Ashrock. Ashrock hands the bag of latinum, which Fallot takes very quickly and inspects it, and they're done with the deal. But then Fallot says, no, this transaction is not complete. He pulls out a phaser and he says that he'll be taking the artifacts as well.
The cool bracelets that Terry really wants.
Yes. Terry, maybe you should have a designer help design those with you. And it'll be the Terry Farrell DS9 line of
jewelry line.
Or the Delta Flyers Journey Through the Wormhole line of jewelry that you market.
So you're going to give this to me as a gift? You guys are going to pull together and buy me a gold bracelet? Right. Solid gold.
That'll work. Yes.
But it won't be tough because you're going to have to buy three because there's no way you're buying me one.
That's right.
And if your ladies are getting ladies. One.
What do you mean? I want one. I think it would look super cool. They're unisex, those bracelets. They're absolutely unisex.
It's 2024. If you want it to be unisex, it's unisex.
Thank you.
Exactly. Thank
you. Fallot pulls out that phaser and he shoots. Poor Ashrock. Poor Ashrock with that amazing makeup job gets blown back. Ashrock throws as he's being shot, the whole bag of rings gets thrown in the air and caught.
It was
by
a little
Quark.
Home Alone. It was a little Home Alone
it
moment.
Was it was so like, Home Alone. Quark was Kevin from Home Alone catching the bag. Like, what? Yes. Me? Yes. It was very much like that. That's when Ashrock yells at Quark to pick up the latinum and move. Which Quark picks up pretty easily, 199 bars of gold latinum. I'm sure that's heavy, but they hightail it out of there. There's an alarm that Odo does see, right? He's in a security office. He sends security to level 22, section 5. Mm-hmm. And this is where in the corridor we see Quark holding stuff, and Fallot is basically using Quark as his shield in a way, as the guards are shooting at them with their phasers. Fallot is shooting back, but using Quark as a shield at the same time.
A little further down the airlock, Fallot and Quark are running off, you know, trying to escape. Fallot's heading to the airlock now, runs into Dax and Melora.
Yes.
He tells them to get back on the ship.
Get back in.
I don't know why he wouldn't request the Vulcan music as well. It's just a side thought, but you know, please play that relaxing music for us while we try to escape.
But they do go for that.
Yeah, they go back on the ship, and Fallot tells Dax to get him out of here. Dax explains that Melora needs this motor support, that she can't exist in their gravity the same way that they do. And Quark says, I love this moment where Quark goes, you know, I'll wait in the back. And Fallot goes, nope, in the front where I can see you.
Yeah.
Very funny. Mm-hmm. Classic comedic beat there.
Yeah.
We go to ops. We see Miles has gotten a notice that they're trying to escape. The ship is leaving. In this scene, they tractor the ship. And Sisko says, you know, calls them and says, return to the station at once. And they don't reply. So the tractor beam is locked onto them, pulling them back. This is our action sequence. Mm-hmm. I'm going to fly through it quickly. Back in the shuttle, Fallot demands they release the ship. He's going to shoot the hostages if they don't. And at first he points his gun at Quark, but then he says, no, I have something for you. Something special for you. And he shoots Melora. Poor Melora. When he shoots her and she goes falling, my first question was, why isn't the Jane Fonda exoskeleton continuing to
a little electric special effect, so it was
something, but he does shoot her. It looks like she's dead. She goes falling pretty hard, and Sisko takes Bashir from ops back in ops. He takes Bashir and Miles to the Rio Grande, says give us 10 seconds, and then disengage the tractor beam, so they beam onto the Rio Grande. and back on the bad guy's ship on the Orinoco. The tractor beam releases them, and Fallot says, get us through the wormhole. But they do read Sisko's ship behind him. And then we cut away and we see Melora's not dead. She starts to wake up.
Okay, just stop for 1 second. Yes. Didn't you think that maybe the Baron, maybe Rick Colby could have directed Sid to be a little bit more shocked that she's dead? Because clearly the guy says, I'm going to kill one of these guys, right? That phaser is set on to super stun. But when the camera cuts back to the reaction on, you know, Bashir's face, it's like nothing even happened. Like this is the person he's in.
I had the same question later on when he realizes that she's alive. It wasn't as emotional as I expected.
Okay.
And
okay.
I wondered now that you're connecting all this, I wonder if they shot these scenes before. They might have shot.
I bet. Out of order.
So he hadn't played the scenes yet, the love scenes.
No.
So he didn't know how that was going to feel. And because I feel in both of those moments, it was less emotional than I would have expected.
But isn't that the duty of the director to know where those moments are? And he should have mapped that out then, really.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, it is.
Alrighty.
And that is why, by the way, if they had writers on the set, sometimes directors, especially when you're first starting off, it's hard for you to wrap your head around the whole thing as much as the actors. Having a writer on set who's been through the process for weeks or months already could look at that and say to the director, hey, I think Bashir should be a little more emotional.
Yes, we haven't
shot it yet,
100%.
But that would have helped. And we didn't have writers on Star Trek sets. Yeah.
They should have had at least an emissary.
Somebody, yes, an emissary, yes. like a prophet from the writer's room.
Exactly. I bet the writers would have appreciated it.
I don't think the writers wanted it back then. They didn't look at it like an advantage. They looked at it like, oh, the actors are going to complain to us. And
No. I think Ira always says he and other guys wish they could come down to the set more. And first of all, you remember how far away they were from us?
Yes. Yes. Very far.
Really far.
Like another town over there.
Even a golf cart would feel like a long time to get there.
Yep.
But they wanted to be.
So I think some of the writers
shot
did.
So fast, and there were so many hours, and
yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh well, if we could go back in time, if only someone had a time machine, go back and have writers join us.
Or I just go back and I tell Sid, I go, Sid, this is going to look really great if you look really distressed that she's getting killed. Okay. And then later, once you realize she's alive, Sid, I came from the future, by the way. And I'm going to tell you also look really, really happy that she's alive. And he'll be like, okay, Garrett from the future. And then that would have been it. So,
wow.
Yeah. Wow. If only we could solve about everything, that we just need Garrett on our team and we're done. We're good.
Exactly.
We're gold.
All right. So the tractor beams off. Fallot says, go through the wormhole. Sisko's chasing. Melora wakes up. I made a note here. In the Rio Grande, Miles O'Brien is piloting this space chase. And I thought, oh, so Miles is a hotshot pilot too, as well as a engineer. And
they've already established that he's a great pilot in a prior episode. So this is not
did?
The first time.
I forgot about Robbie. That. Well, it hits the same tender spot with me as a pilot myself.
Right.
Well, every time I see it.
I also was a hotshot pilot in one of my lifetimes. Yeah.
So do you feel a little bit, you know, falling short of, because the fact that you were only a hotshot pilot and nothing else, and the other characters in DS9 are hotshot pilots as well as other things? Is that what you're
like,
saying?
Yeah, like I was a hotshot pilot, but I was just a nurse in the infirmary. Like literally, he called me the nurse.
You were a nurse in the infirmary, a hotshot pilot, and you were Casanova.
Robbie.
That's true. Okay, I had plenty of things to do. Okay, so Miles is piloting this thing. They're chasing him. Sisko says, stay with him. But they go to warp, and so now they're at warp. They can't do much when they're at warp.
No.
Back to the Orinoco.
Mm-hmm.
Runabout Orinoco, bad guy's ship. He's distracted by Dax and Quark, and Dax does notice Melora moving, but you can see Dax stands up. She's kind of trying to distract cleverly Fallot from looking back when Melora turns off, hits some buttons, turns off the gravity, reaches up because she can't stand, reaches up, turns off the gravity, and then she starts to float. Everybody starts to float, and she kind of pushes herself like a torpedo,
yeah,
rams into yeah. Falith, taking him out. It's cool. Do you remember how the anti-gravity happened in the shuttle, that scene?
I don't. It's so funny because I wonder if I'm in the shot. They might have shot it in such a way that they didn't need anybody else.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Melora and the other guy. Because also, I would imagine that would... either we waited in our trailers or we were let go to come back the next morning, right? And that would be their last shot kind of
yeah.
thing. Those kinds of things happened a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was cool to see them doing anti-gravity in a shuttle in a small space like that. In the big quarters, you can imagine they've got wires up above, but in there, that was tricky to do. So
yeah,
I also wanted to just throw in there that, you know, when Falith says, "I have something special for you," and according to one of the earlier drafts, that special thing was killing him by having a SETI Alpha 5 eel from like Wrath of Khan when it went into Chekhov's ear, you know, that yeah. scene. So he was going to do the same thing to Quark, allow that little eel to go in his ear and drive him crazy.
An earworm.
Yeah. So
gross.
Mm-hmm. That's gross. Thanks for that image.
You're welcome.
Yeah. It's kind of like when you were describing Ferengis cutting their bodies into body parts.
And, yes. Was that gross too?
That was gross too. Okay. Back on the Rio Grande with Sisko and team, they see the ships dropped out of warp. The generators turned off. This is where Bashir realizes Melora is alive. Right. He even has a line. He says, "Melora is alive."
Yeah.
But it was just like Data. It wasn't emotional. Yeah,
it wasn't like, "This is my girlfriend. Yeah. She's alive." Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Or even my science experiment. Yay.
Anything. Anything. Yes, gravity's reinstated. The engines are down. They beam over. Sisko and Bashir beam over to the Orinoco, where Quark is holding a phaser on our bad guy. And they beam in. This shot was beautiful because it started on someone crossing through the frame, panned to the middle, then sort of locked off. And someone passed out of the frame. They beamed in.
Yeah.
And then it... And then it tracked them back over.
Back
it was a wonder. This whole scene is a wonder.
That's pretty cool.
With a beam in.
Yeah.
And a soft lock in the middle. It was really well done by the Baron. And I just wanted to point that out.
That's nice.
Clever.
Very nice.
They head back home. We cut back to, I think our final scene is a Klingon date in the Klingon restaurant, a date where Melora wonders why the phaser didn't kill her.
Mm-hmm.
And Bashir says, "Well, maybe it's those neural treatments that I did based on Nathaniel, what's his name?
Taros.
Taros's work, of course.
Yeah.
My great-great-great-grandfather.
I think it's important that we talk about that here. That it's
and
also
he's not
saved
fishing for
life.
The compliment, is that I'm really saying I saved your life.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I kind of saved your life.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Bashir does ask if she, wants to do any more neural
treatments.
Yeah. And she says, "No, I don't want to do them."
Mm-mm.
That she wouldn't be who she truly is if she did.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very grateful.
She would not be the same nude cartographer if she does the changes. Yes.
And I love that she says she thanks him very sincerely for getting her to open up to people, that she's, even though she's not going to be do the treatments and walk, she's a different person because of Bashir. She's open to people. She's, softer and more connected. And I thought that was really
good. And he was genuinely kind to her. Most people seem to react to her like, all of us, it's harder when someone's attacking you to calm down and react in a calm way to help that person calm down. And that's what Bashir did for her, which was really great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do want to point out that there's a moment the Klingon serenades them silently. he like a minstrel walks through. I thought it was the most terrifying Klingon song I'd ever heard. There's nothing sweet or romantic about it. I was like, whoa, it was so jarring to me.
No, really? I didn't get that. Okay.
It was a nightmare song to me.
Okay, that's fine.
It was not a sweet Serenade. Love song. No.
No.
It wasn't Delvok.
It was not Delvok.
Vulcan composer. Okay. No. All right. Well, it didn't bother me as much as it bothered you, just so you know.
The minstrel was weird, but it is a very sweet moment in the end. And she does say, like, I just want to sit here and remember all of this, which I thought was a great, great way to.
That line was awesome. Yeah. I want to remember all this. And that's how they end. They end the episode on that line, basically.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
All right. There you go.
Okay. We got it.
Melora.
Yay.
Melora.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Okay, what are our themes or lessons for this episode? Let's start with Robbie McNeil. What is your overall lesson?
Well, my theme, my lesson comes from the wise man, Billy Joel. Don't go changing to try and please me. Don't change the color of your hair. Yeah. Don't go changing. That's thank you.
Yeah, we're your backup singers. Remember? Okay,
that's my theme. The way you are too.
Love you just the way you are.
All right. Yeah. Terry Farrell, what's your lesson for this episode?
To thine own self be true.
Okay.
Nice.
Because you could see her wrestling with the choice pretty early on. It was kind of interesting to see her kind of stunned at the idea. It felt more like she trusted him and was letting him convince her this was a great idea. But it took her a little bit more than a second thought to tell him her thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
We could see her going through that before she revealed it all to him.
Mm.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. My lesson can be said in multiple ways, different ways. One way would be to say the grass is not always greener on the other side, or you don't need to keep up with the Johnsons. So, I mean, there's basically what you guys said, but in a different way. So
nice. That's
it. Yeah.
Great. Cool. Don't keep up with the Johnsons.
Yeah.
No.
Don't keep up with the Johnsons. And the Patreon poll winner for theme, lesson, moral, the episode will be read by Terry Farrell.
No One Is an Island, submitted by Mary B.
That's an interesting, because that's what Bashir was saying too.
Mm. Nobody, I love Mary B's.
Yeah, that's a great moral.
Good one.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to this free podcast. If you want an ad-free version of this, please check us out at patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers. $3 a month, you get ad-free podcast, and you get bonus material starting at $3, only $3 a month. So please check that out.
For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. And if you aren't a Patreon patron, just like Robbie said, patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers.
Check it out. Ad free.
Hey, you know what?
What?
That's less than going to Starbucks and getting a cup of coffee.
It really is. Right. It's actually exactly $3. My goodness.
Yeah.
People spend more than $3 for Starbucks coffee every day of their life. Am I right?
Every day. Multiple every day. Times a day, times, some of us.
In 1 month, three times. What is it? What does a standard Starbucks drink go for?
$5. I'd say $5.
$5. They drink it every day for 30 days. That's $150.
And that's not a fancy one. That's not a fancy one.
That's a base level drink from Starbucks, right? You're spending $150 a month for a base level drink from Starbucks where you could spend $3 a month to hear all the amazing bonus material that we have. I think it's a no-brainer.
And we appreciate your generosity and joining us.